Hi, this is Pete Batchelor, Senior Vice President in the Product Group at Virtus Investment Partners. I want to welcome you to this mid-October edition of Virtus Voices, and today I'm really excited to have the opportunity to speak with Doug Foreman. Doug is the Chief Investment Officer at Kayne Anderson Rudnick. Doug, how are you?
Great, Pete. Thanks for having me today.
And the last time you were on Virtus Voices, Doug, it was right around the time the Fed was just about to cut rates for the first time in a decade. The market was fretting over trade wars every day everyone was talking about. Since then, the Fed's actually cut rates again. The latest news on the trade wars, at least with China, is that the U.S. and China are nearing a deal. And then whether it's Brexit or what's going on in Hong Kong, what do you make of all of these high-level headlines?
Well, Pete, I think what you're seeing is global central banks, not just the U.S., around the world, have been lowering rates here recently, and really in response to slowing industrial activity. What we've seen is around the globe in mainly developed countries like Germany and even Japan, China, et cetera, we've seen a major slowdown in industrial activity. And it's difficult to tell exactly how much of this is related to the trade disputes that have been dragging on now much longer than we or others ever thought, I think, over the last 12 to 18 months, and how much of it's just sort of a slowing of an economy that's been in an expansion mode for an extended period of time, over 10 years. But the bottom line is, if you look at global PMIs, so a purchasing manager index, they've been decelerating now for about 12 to 18 months, about the time that the trade war started to pick up. So what we've seen is many parts, and the U.S. has been the best in industrial activity relative to the rest of the world, but even there, what we saw in the latest month in September was it broke 50 for the first time in quite a while and is down to the 47.8 area, which is now in a contraction state. When you get down to the low 40s, you're definitely in a recession. And so the U.S. is close to being in a recession in industrial activity, and Germany is down in the low 40s for their PMI in industrial side. And so what we've seen is the consumer globally is what's holding everything up, both in the U.S. and abroad. And the consumer is in great shape. They've got jobs. Jobs are plentiful. The unemployment rate's as low as I think it's been since the early 1960s. And consumer net wealth is in great shape, has fully recovered from the 08 decline and is up 50, 60% since then. So the consumer confidence is still reasonable, et cetera. And as most of you know, the consumer's two-thirds or more of the GDP of a given country, particularly this one. So consumer strong, industrial really weak. And so that's been going on and that's continued. Now, we do have a phase one trade deal. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but as long as tariffs don't get worse, that would be a positive going forward, and the October tariff increase looked like they were going to be delayed, if not eliminated, which is good news. The December are still on the table. If we can get that delayed or extended in the next phase, that would be a real positive, too. So I think tariffs definitely is difficult, like I said earlier, to tell how much has hurt this global industrial activity. It certainly hasn't helped, and getting worse would not help at all going forward. So we're encouraged to see that. So I think the key is that growth is going to continue to slow overall because at least yet we don't see any big upturn in the industrial side of the economy. We are bouncing, I think, along the bottom, but I don't think we're quite there yet. So that's sort of what I make of what's happening at the big macro level, Pete.
Yeah, and you touched on the industrial slowdown, and I think I've heard you say before, and I think this is interesting because I was going to ask you about recession, probability of recession. We've heard, obviously, a lot of rhetoric when we've had these short-term yield curve inversions, this increased rhetoric about, you know, recession right around the corner. But I've heard you say, listen, and I want to get your thoughts on the expectation during the next recession. Do you expect it to be like we've seen historically, or as you said, we've seen evidence of recession within some of the subsectors of the market. Can you just touch on that?
I mean, I think we're basically in the midst of what I would call a third mini recession. The first one started back in 2011, 2012 with the European debt crisis when Portugal and Greece and Italy and other countries started having tremendous fiscal problems. And then there was a period in 2014 when the price of crude basically collapsed as it went from over $100 a barrel down to 26. And certainly if you were in the energy business at that point in time, you weren't in a recession. You were in an outright depression. And so we've had what I would consider three mini recessions already over the last 10 years, despite the fact that we haven't had an overall technical recession here in the U.S., and that's two down quarters of GDP back-to-back. So the idea that we've just sailed along here merrily and haven't had a lot of challenges in different industries and growth rates over the last 10 years really just isn't accurate. And if you're a stock picker, you've certainly noticed that. So I think people, investors in general, are all sitting around waiting for the next recession. I don't know. You know, they haven't been repealed. I don't know if and when it's going to occur. I think we will get slower growth into 2020 for the reasons that I outlined earlier. Even with an improvement in trade, that could help stabilize things a little bit more. But I think, you know, we're going to grow at 1.5% probably over the next 12 to 18 months. And that's, you know, that's a little bit below trend, but no big disaster. And I don't think we're going to have a big recession. I think investors have been waiting for an 08 type event, and I just don't see the excesses that are going to create that in anything, in any area. So it's difficult. And when you haven't had a boom, it's really hard to have a bust. And when you haven't had a boom in particular and you're already busting in certain areas, it's really difficult to see how things are going to get a lot worse from where they already are. And the other thing I'd like to point out is that, in, you know, manufacturing, particularly in this country, is a very small part of the economy. So you need to believe that manufacturing weakness is going to spread to the consumer and other parts, service parts of the economy. And historically, there hasn't been that tight of a linkage. And we've yet to see even massive layoffs in the industrial side. So I think it bears watching, and it's a risk factor going forward. But, and the yield curve, by the way, is starting to steepen over the last for 3 or 4 weeks. So inversion, while negative, and I'm certainly not a fan of that, I think that is a very clear warning sign. But I think that the fact that the Fed cut rates again, and hopefully will cut rates one more time, at least before year end, I think can help the yield curve steepen and get it back to more normal shape and help reduce the risk of a recession going forward.
And let me ask you something else. I wanted to get your thoughts on late in the third quarter, we saw a sell-off in high growth names, and we saw an accompanying rally and sort of some of the beaten up value stocks. I think some are looking at that as just a possible inflection point in terms of that growth value leadership. I just want to get your thoughts on what happened there and what can investors take from that.
Yeah, it's not abundantly clear what really happened, but I'll give you my thoughts as to what I think the market's saying or possibly thinking. First of all, growth value, really a lot of people have coined it as momentum selling off and value digging in and doing better. And certainly that was pretty pronounced for a couple weeks there. And I think it happened a couple weeks after the yield curve inverted. And I think what the market's message was there potentially is that the economy had gotten slow enough growth. As I mentioned earlier, things have been slowing the last 12 to 18 months. And I think it got down to a point where the growth rate was so much in question, particularly on the industrial side, and the yield curve inverted so that investors started to doubt the sustainability of this current expansion. And when you're worried about a recession, companies that have done well, which called momentum stocks, and they're doing well because their businesses are doing well. That's why they're going up. They're not going up because people just buy them because they're going up. They're going up because the underlying fundamentals support it for the most part. There are a few exceptions, but generally that's true. So the stocks, people start to believe that things are going to get so bad that even the best positioned companies can't make numbers going forward. And, of course, people have huge gains in these things. So a lot of these stocks that got eclipsed were up, you know, 50 to 100% in the last 12 months in response to great fundamentals in a weakening environment. So there's a shortage of those out there. So people have crowded into those gradually over the last 12 to 18 months. And so they were somewhat overowned, I think. And then couple that with big profits, couple that with an uncertainty about the 2020 outlook and the yield curve inversion. Time to take some chips off the table, move to the sidelines and see how things come along. And of course, why not put the money into beaten down value stocks? These are companies that haven't done anything right the last 12 to 18 months or longer, and nobody owns these stocks because of that, and they've had a lot of fundamental weakness, and nobody owns them. So a good place to hide because I have to stay fully invested, so I'll rotate into that. And I think a lot of hedge funds or people that just trade basket of stocks were long momentum and short value, and they needed to unwind those trades because they got caught. Very similar to when the I don't know if you recall when the VIX was down below 10 and everybody was on margin long the VIX below 10, which was all-time lows in terms of volatility. And then all of a sudden volatility picks up for a day or two and everybody runs for the exits and the door is very small and the VIX skyrockets to 25 on basically no news in a five-day period as everybody unwinds their positions. I think that's basically what happened. It really hasn't followed through at all. So for it to follow through, you actually need some fundamental support for that to follow through. And by that, I mean you need an improving economy. You need to have a trade deal. You need to have more rate cuts. You need to see some industrial activity start to turn up as opposed to turn down. You need a whole set of fundamental variables to fall into place for these companies to actually do well because they need a rising tide. They're the types of businesses that need a rising tide to do well. And if they don't have that, there's not a strong secular growth case. So they're going to struggle in a low growth environment. It's difficult for them to make any fundamental progress. And as you know, at the end of the day, we believe fundamentals are what sustain stock prices over any reasonable time period. Everything else is just a trade and a blip.
Yeah, and on that note, as a fundamental bottom-up investor, what do you worry about? What are the things that keep you up at night?
Well, we worry about our company's competitive position and whether or not the business that we're invested in. You know, we're a stock picker. We take it company by company, stock by stock, in pretty much all of our portfolios here at Cain. And so, you know, what keeps us up at night is, you know, do we have the right business? Are the attributes that we believe are unique, are they continuing to stay that way? Are there competitors that have a better mousetrap that are out there that are starting to take market share from our companies? Are there technology disruptions that are being created that are eroding our company's competitive position? Those are the things that we worry about, because at the end of the day, if we own the right business and it's a protected business and it's got nice returns and it's going to stay that way and take market share over time from their peers because of that, then it should be a good investment for us over any reasonable time period. And yeah, recessions will come and recessions will go, but you know, the well-positioned companies typically will just take more market share during those downturns and come out the other side even stronger and be even better investments. So, you know, we don't think you can time the market. We don't think you can even predict recessions with any degree of certainty before and in advance. But, you know, we do think it's possible to evaluate businesses on a one-by-one basis, and really that's what keeps us up at night more than anything else, especially in the small cap space, because the macro just isn't that important in that space.
Well said. And, Doug, thanks again for taking the time to share your insights on the markets. As always, a pleasure speaking with you. Also want to thank everyone else who has taken the time to listen to this podcast. If you're interested in learning more about Cain Anderson Rudnick Quality Growth Strategies or any other Virtus offering, please call us at 800-243-4361 or visit us online at virtus.com.